For LGBTQ people, grappling with our identities can be complicated and difficult. So discovering a label that fits how we're feeling about sexuality and gender helps us understand that we're not alone and that there's other people like us.
It was simply a matter of sexual choice or to get work in jazz. William Lee Tipton began to more actively work to pass as a male, but by 1940 was living as a man in private life as well.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Queer couples in Japan and Hong Kong challenge marriage inequality, the secret life of a gender-bending jazz giant, and do labels help us or hurt us? All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 3 weeks ending January 5th, 2019. Lawyers for 10 gay and lesbian couples in Japan announced in late December that they would be filing a lawsuit against the federal government for failing to open civil marriage to them. Article 24 of Japan's constitution says that marriage shall be based only on the mutual consent of both sexes. Equality activists claim that the emphasis is on mutual consent and not on gender. The government argues that the term husband and wife in the civil code and family registration laws refers only to heterosexual couples. The 10 couples, who according to the Kyoto News Service are also seeking financial compensation, will file the lawsuit in district courts throughout the country, including Tokyo and Nagoya in February. One of the attorneys, Shinya Maizono, told the press that, "We want our call to be widespread so that the freedom to marry will be recognized for everyone." 8 municipalities in Japan, including Fukuoka and Osaka, offer limited local benefits to registered same-gender couples. But the conservative government of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe continues to resist any action at the federal level to legally recognize lesbian and gay couples. Meanwhile, university students Misato Kawasaki and Mayu Otaki, each in her early 20s, have announced their plan to tie the knot in all 26 countries that have opened civil marriage to same-gender couples. They promised to post pictures of the ceremonies on their blog during their six-month adventure in an effort to convince readers that Japan should become the 27th country.
A 21-year-old gay university student and his 31-year-old activist partner filed suit this week in Hong Kong's High Court demanding the right to marry. Attorneys for the couple, identified only as TF and STK, argue that denying them that right violates equality requirements of both the city's Bill of Rights and basic law. Same-gender couples have challenged the Chinese city's laws covering spousal visas and taxation, but this is the first lawsuit to deal directly with full marriage equality. According to the South China Morning Post, 2 judicial reviews of the case were held last year, but were kept under wraps until the preliminary hearing made the case public on January 3rd. Justice Anderson Chow Kaming approved a hearing for the couple, but he said the court would first hear a related case involving a 29-year-old lesbian seeking a civil partnership with her female partner. He said that case would raise the same basic issues involved in the gay couple's marriage lawsuit. Hong Kong's one and only openly queer legislator, Raymond Chan Chi-Twen, acknowledged concerns that pushing for full marriage rights head-on might be premature and result in an adverse outcome that could delay equality for many more years. But he said that at least some people in the LGBTQ community want to have their rights fought for on any and all levels. Other active lawsuits in Hong Kong courts involve a gay senior immigration officer who's seeking civil service spousal benefits for his male partner, and another by a gay couple seeking equal access to public housing.
2 women became the first queer couple to officially get married in Austria a few minutes after midnight on January 1st. Nicole Koponik and Daniela Payer walked down the aisle in the southern Austrian city of Velden. After years of advocacy by determined equality activists, Austria's constitutional court decided in December 2017 that the civil institution should be open to same-gender couples. but they delayed their ruling from taking effect until January 1st of this year. Even townspeople and officials got involved in planning the wedding. Velden Mayor Ferdinand Vuk said that it was a great pleasure and honor for us that Nicole and Daniela got married here. The brides are each 37 years old and were engaged for 4 years. Until now, gay and lesbian couples in the heavily Roman Catholic country could only enter into less than equal registered partnerships. But Kaponik and Payer decided to wait until they could legally marry. Now, Kaponik said, everyone has the chance to decide for themselves if they want a marriage for all or if they want a registered partnership. The court allowed the 5 successful plaintiff couples in the 2017 lawsuit to marry before the ruling came into force.
The Kingston Fire Department is investigating the cause of a fire that virtually burned down the headquarters of JFLAG, Jamaica's leading queer rights group, on the evening of December 30th. A statement posted to the group's Facebook page thanked the first responders and said they were grateful that no one was hurt in the blaze. We will be providing an update when further details become available and how we foresee this impacting our programs, the statement said, as well as to advise on the kind of support we will require to continue our operations. JFLAG was founded in 1998 in a nation considered by many to be the most homophobic in the world. People who are even perceived to be LGBTQ suffer routine threats, harassment, and violence on the Caribbean island. Jamaican police are often disinterested at best or complicit at worst.
Pakistan's first ever Trans Pride March was held in the city of Lahore on December 29th. Transgender celebrity and activist Cami Sid added name recognition to the festivities. The procession of trans people and their allies kicked off with a press conference featuring leading activists. Transgender murder victims of hate violence were remembered, in addition to expressions of support for the trans community. The Daily Pakistan reported that the colorful, peaceful, and celebratory march drew a large crowd of onlookers as it made its way through the streets of the country's second largest city. Lawmakers in Pakistan guaranteed the fundamental rights of trans people in 2018 and made it against the law for businesses and employers to discriminate against them. But trans pride marchers protested the government's refusal to implement those reforms. British colonial-era laws criminalizing lesbian and gay people, however, remain on the books, and convictions of consensual adult same-gender sex can bring prison terms of up to 10 years. Unlike neighboring and often antagonistic India, there's no movement in Pakistan to repeal anti-gay sex laws. And sexual and gender minorities in general continue to face harsh societal hostility.
The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit has overturned the decision of a federal judge in the nation's capital that blocked the implementation of President Donald Trump's ban on transgender people serving in America's military. The appeals court rejected on January 4th the argument that the ban violates the constitutional equality rights of transgender people, and deferred to the Pentagon to determine how best to run the military. It was the first legal victory for the Trump trans ban after several defeats. Other federal courts have issued injunctions against implementation of the ban, so there are no immediate consequences of the D.C. appeals court ruling. Trump announced an across-the-board ban on military service by trans people on Twitter in July 2017. The proposal has since undergone more than one government study and various permutations before then-Defense Secretary James Mattis announced details of a trans ban last year. Supporters claim that it allows qualified trans people to serve, but critics point out that they can only serve in the gender they were assigned at birth, a trans variation on the now-defunct Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that required lesbian and gay service members to stay in the closet. The Trump administration has already asked the Supreme Court to take up the issue. According to Reuters, the justices are scheduled to consider whether or not to hear 3 separate government appeals of those injunctions during a private conference on January 11th. Like so many of his other actions, Trump's proposal attempts to overturn yet another policy of his predecessor, Barack Obama. That administration had welcomed qualified transgender troops and also provided them with the medical care needed to transition if they so desired.
And finally, in happier government news, the Royal Canadian Mint announced in late December that a new $1 coin would be issued in 2019 to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the repeal of laws criminalizing private consensual adult same-gender sex. The Mint said the exact details of the design are being kept secret to maximize the impact when the coin is released. Leaks suggest that the coin will feature the word equality in both English and French, Canada's two official languages, and a stylized overlapping of two human faces within a large circle. The repeal process began in 1967 under then soon-to-be Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, father of current PM Justin. Parliament approved decriminalization 2 years later. According to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau approved the design of the commemorative coin on December 14, 2018. The elder Trudeau proposed the repeal of anti-gay sex laws while serving as Canada's Justice Minister. "There's no place for the state," he said, "in the bedrooms of the nation."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the 3 weeks ending January 5th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the ever-updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
What Tipton did for jazz, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Dorothy Lucille Tipton was born in 1914 in Oklahoma City. She took up the piano and saxophone, but as a female, she couldn't join the school band. To perform in an almost exclusively male profession, she began dressing as a man and quickly found work playing in honky-tonks. Now, as Billy Tipton, he became a talented pianist, saxophone player, and he sang in a tenor voice. In nightclubs, women swooned over his boyish appearance. He later made jazz records with his newly formed Billy Tipton Trio. Married five times, Tipton managed to maintain his charade with all of his wives. Falling ill in the 80s, he avoided doctors to keep his gender a secret, and a bleeding ulcer cost him his life. After paramedics tried everything they could to revive him, his long-kept secret was a secret no more. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Giz Bow.
Just 1 minute is not enough to tell the story of Billy Tipton, even if it's a Rainbow Minute. He deserves a This Way Out music focus, and our Steve Sims has one.
Billy Tipton was born Dorothy Lucille Tipton on December 29, 1914, in Oklahoma City. The Tipton Sax Quartet were born, the Billy Tipton Memorial Saxophone Quartet, in 1988 in Seattle.
Later in the program.
The thing about gay culture that bugs me the most...
Gay comic actor Nick Dadani.
As a gay man, you're expected to label yourself, you know? You have bears who are the big burly gay men. You have twinks who are the younger slender gays. And you have otters and cubs and koalas, probably. What if we started doing that to straight guys? You'd have the weasel. That's the guy that pretends to respect women in order to get laid. And then you have the, well, I guess that's it.
Here's my label maker. It's bigger than my brain. Let's put a tag on everyone and then begin again. Don't you dare remove it. Change it anytime. There's no way to improve it. It's there in print, that's fine. Who you are or what you do, to whom you may belong. We need to know these simple facts, else why this labeling song?
Label, label, la da di, I'll label you, you label me. Then we'll know who we're supposed to be and we can live obliviously.
Stuck with a label? Looking for one? Consider the pros and cons with our resident queer youth commentators.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Andrew, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Dante talks about the existence of very specific labels in the LGBTQ community and the implications of using these narrow labels as opposed to broader ones.
What is the purpose of a label? In the LGBTQ community, labels can be useful for both ourselves and others. They help us define and understand something about ourselves and feel like part of a community of people like us. For LGBTQ people, grappling with our identities can be complicated and difficult. So discovering a label that fits how we're feeling about sexuality and gender helps us understand that we're not alone and that there's other people like us who feel the same way we do. An example is the divisions we see within asexuality. The term asexual describes a person who doesn't experience sexual attraction, but within that label, some people consider there to be over 15 variations of asexuality. For example, some asexuals don't experience romantic attraction, while others do, to members of the same or opposite sex or even a wider range of genders. Some experience sexual attraction, but only after they've already connected emotionally with someone. Excessively specific labels are becoming common, especially on the internet, but perhaps each specific identity doesn't warrant a specific label. And perhaps even more, it doesn't warrant renouncing larger labels and communities. Having many labels that are too specific can actually be more confusing than useful, even within the LGBTQ community. And outside the community, overly specific labels may be unrecognizable and may antagonize people, making it difficult to understand the variety that exists within our community. Excessively specific labels can look arbitrary or made up to outsiders, especially people who don't know what they mean. This can make LGBTQ identities look more trivial. Turning identity into a list of dictionary-style descriptions distracts from the personal reality and humanity of these identities, along with the stories behind them and the real people they describe. Excessively specific labels also don't serve the other important purpose of labels, connecting with a community. Rather, they cut communities into specific and isolated slices, emphasizing differences rather than similarities and shared experiences. This can be damaging to the larger communities. Feeling connected to our communities is important to LGBTQ people, and fracturing those communities makes it harder to feel connected and to feel that there are many other people like us. This creation of more and more specific labels encourages the notion that labels have to be limiting. The point of labels is to roughly and concisely communicate identities. They were never intended to be all-encompassing descriptions. To make communication easier and strengthen our communities, I think we should try to avoid the idea that labels have to be comprehensive descriptions and limit using overly specific labels, especially when it means decreasing the use of more unifying labels. When it truly matters, nothing is more effective than fully describing your identity. But labels are just tools to connect, and connecting with others with similar identities does not have to mean relinquishing our own uniqueness. Everyone, both inside and outside the LGBTQ community, should realize that vast diversity can exist within a community or label. If labels aren't as often interpreted to be all-encompassing or limiting, people won't feel that they have to withdraw themselves from larger communities because of their differences.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit independent producer based in New York. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
Now I'm fascinated.
And those who love them.
Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
And that's the truth.
Thank you.
talk music and avoid politics, or vice versa, queer music maestro Steve Sims treads the tightrope in between the two for his latest This Way Out music focus.
Oh, listen to the music. Oh, listen to the music. Oh, listen to the music all the time.
As I set out to do research for this segment, I found myself in a quagmire of current events, from white male privilege and living your truth, to non-binary gender issues and authenticity. I had to step back and focus on the music, specifically the late jazz musician band leader of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, Billy Tipton, and a group of musicians from the Northwest named the Tipton's Sax Quartet. That was Get Dirty, Do It Now, from the Tipton's Sax Quartet's 2017 album, Cookbook. Billy Tipton was born Dorothy Lucille Tipton on December 29, 1914, in Oklahoma City. The Tipton Sax Quartet were born the Billy Tipton Memorial Saxophone Quartet in 1988 in Seattle. With a few exceptions in the 30s and 40s, jazz was a man's world. There was an unwritten code in the jazz world that women just didn't get hired. Whether it was simply a matter of sexual choice or to get work in jazz, William Lee Tipton began to more actively work to pass as a male by binding his breasts and patting his pants. At first, he only presented as male in performance, but by 1940 was living as a man in private life as well, and lived the life of a man until January 21st, 1989, and the post-mortem revelation that he was biologically female. This is the Billy Tipton Trio with the song The Man I Love off the 1957 album Sweet Georgia Brown. Billy's image was one of a gentleman, a heterosexual male, with everything that that implied in 1940s America. In 1958, Tipton had a chance to break into the big time when the group was offered a recording contract and a gig opening for Liberace in Reno, Nevada, at more than double its usual fee. But Tipton said no, perhaps for fear that it might expose Billy's bold solution to gaining a certain amount of recognition in what was largely a man's world. This is the song number 6 from the Tipton Sax Quartet's 2008 album, Laws of Motion. John Otto was one of the Tipton Sax Quartet's founding members in 1988, and at that time was known as Babs Helly. He also coined the group's original name, the Billy Tipton Memorial Saxophone Quartet. He left the group in 1990, and more currently, has done work as a transgender activist. This is Impish, off the Tipton's 2010 album, Strange Flower. Amy Denio is an original member of the Billy Tipton Memorial Saxophone Quartet, dating from the band's very first rehearsal at her house in the fall of 1988. She was with them until 1996 and then took a hiatus. This is Recipe for Disaster, off the Tipton's We Love to Meet Again live album from 2016. In 2002, Amy and Jessica Lurie, another original member, reformed the band, now renamed the Tipton's Sax Quartet. The fourth founding member was Marjorie Demuck. Marjorie, who had a master's in music from Boston University, passed away in 2011 at the age of 58. This is Drive from the 2005 album by the same title. things I really enjoy about the Tipton Sax Quartet are the names of their songs, and they've recorded 8 albums. This song from 1996 is called Disgruntled Postal Worker. One of the challenges I faced when I set out to research this piece was my frustration over the information swirling around the current debate about non-binary gender, males, females, and LGBT civil rights. For me, the issue boils down to a human's right to feel authentic, live their truth, versus the potential that another may be at some point possibly come face to face with this in the real world for a few minutes. This is the Billy Tipton Trio in 1957 with Sweet Georgia Brown. I've been face-to-face with the issue of non-binary gender and LGBT civil rights my whole life. As a kid, I had the honor to know Billy Tipton. He was my neighbor, and his adopted sons and I went to school and were in scouts together. I worked with a transgender woman in one of my first volunteer work experiences. My former brother-in-law is now a transgender woman. All three are good, decent people who I believe are better for their paths. Billy Tipton was named by Time magazine as one of 21 transgender people who influenced American culture. When it comes to non-binary gender, the T, or the Q in LGBTQ, and the LG and B, their contribution to music is undeniable. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Steve Sims and Sarah Sweeney and Michael LeBeau, produced with Brian DeSazer. The Rainbow Minute was read by Giz Bow and produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns. And Outcasters Andrew and Dante were produced by Mark Soffice. Impetus, Tipton's Sax Quartet, and the Billy Tipton Trio performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed Red Theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Christopher Matthews, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. You can lend a hand by visiting thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KUNR Reno, Nevada, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Happy New Year, and stay tuned.